And Shamshi-Adad, once he captured the throne of Ashur, this allowed him to expand and then dominate the northern Tigris River. Shamshi-Adad installed his younger son, Yasma-Adad, on the throne in Mari. He put his older son on the throne in a city to the east. But Yasma-Adad proved to be a very disappointing choice. Letters from Shamshi-Adad to his son reprimanded him for failing to organize his household and often would compare him unfavorably to his older brother. Shamshi-Adad wrote, "Don't you have a beard on your chin? When are you going to take charge of your house? Don't you see that your brother is leading vast armies? So you too take charge of the palace." Shamshi-Adad also made sure that his younger son knew of his brother's victories. "While your brother has won a great victory here, you remain there, reclining among the women." Not very good parenting skills. Yasma-Adad responded to his father's denigration by complaining, "How can I be like a child and incapable of directing affairs when you, Daddy, promoted me? I am coming to you right now to have it out with Daddy about my unhappiness." Doesn't seem that Yasma-Adad actually did go face his father. He was living a very comfortable life in Mari. Even without these letters revealing the strained family dynamics of the Assyrian palace, Yasma-Adad did not appear to have been an especially successful ruler. And he disappeared from the throne of Mari almost immediately after his father's death. You might recall when we talked about food that I mentioned Yasma-Adad as a king who was very concerned with getting the most exotic luxuries for his own personal meals. Zimri-Lim became the new king of Mari in 1776 BC. He claimed, probably falsely, that he had a blood relationship to the previous Amorite dynasty. And since the Amorites had been so prosperous, this would help reinforce his claim to the throne. Whatever his origins, Zimri-Lim was a far better administrator than the Assyrian ruler Yasma-Adad. And the state of Mari was thriving while he was king. Politically, Zimri-Lim reestablished a strong diplomatic relationship with Babylon, and he also created a network of smaller vassal states that helped Mari expand. These diplomatic alliances were secured by marriages with Zimri-Lim's daughters, and we'll come back to discuss those marriages a little bit later on. One reason for the focus on diplomacy rather than military expansion was that the king of Elam was still very powerful when Zimri-Lim took the throne. And you will recall that the Elamite king would often arrange matters between the lesser kings of Mesopotamia, and basically everyone was a lesser king in comparison to him. Zimri-Lim was one of the rulers who fell under the Elamite king's control. And that, too, gives us a sense of how strong this Elamite king was. He is in southwest Iran. Zimri-Lim is in northern Syria along the Euphrates. And yet Zimri-Lim considers himself a vassal and does what the king of Elam suggests. One of the most contentious issues between Zimri-Lim and Hammurabi was the control over the city of Hit on the Euphrates. It was a little bit further south than Mari, right around the bend of the Euphrates. Both Hammurabi and Zimri-Lim desperately wanted control of Hit. Hammurabi wanted it because it was a source of bitumen, which is a binding caulk that is used in boats to make sure that they're waterproof. Hammurabi needed bitumen to build boats, to transport his troops, and also to ensure trade. And one letter from Hammurabi to Zimri-Lim clarifies this need quite explicitly. Hammurabi writes, "Your country's power lies in donkeys and chariots. My country's power lies in ships. That is exactly why I really want the bitumen and pitch from that city. Why else would I want the city from him? Perhaps there would also be political reasons for having control over a city that far up the Euphrates, but Hammurabi really focuses on the bitumen as the source of his desire for it.